Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 9th of July. Our guest this hour has done a major study of third-party candidates and in a recent report says that they may impact the Obama-McCain race by shaping the debate and more dramatically by playing kingmaker by capitalizing on third-party successes in as many as 28 statewide races in 2006. Third-party impact in 2008, a report prepared by the Center for the Study of Politics and Governance, and our guest is Professor Lawrence Jacobs. He's a Walter and Joan Mondale Chair for Political Studies, and he is Director of the Center for the Study of Politics and Governance at the Hubert H. Humphrey Institute of Public Affairs at the University of Minnesota. He has written extensively on presidential and legislative politics, elections and voting behavior, public opinion and polling, American political history, Midwestern swing states, third-party politics, Social Security, and healthcare policy. And we'll be welcoming phone calls, as we do for all of our guests, for Professor Jacobs. The number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, the Milwaukee line is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050, or send an email if you'd like, and that's talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Professor Jacobs, nice to talk to you again. Hi.
Good to be back.
How did the conference go? I just wanted to ask you, you had so many big names picking the vice president nominee. What should we look for? Was it good?
It was an excellent conference. We had your former governor, Tommy Thompson, there, and Vice President Mondale. I would say the big take-home message from that conference, which was on C-SPAN, and your listeners can go listen to it or watch it. The big take-home message is that the selection of the vice presidential running mate has very little impact in November in terms of election outcomes, but it has a huge impact in terms of policymaking. What's happened with Dick Cheney in some ways reflects what's been going on since Walter Mondale was vice president. Other ways, it's kind of miscast that tradition, which tended to be a little more subordinate.
Hmm. So Dick Cheney has made it an extremely powerful position.
He has, and I would say he reflects this general three-decade-long evolution across party lines. The big change under Cheney is that he's been less subservient and subordinate to the president. If you look at the way, again, Democrat or Republican, there was no real independent political strategy to challenge what the president was doing. We're seeing, I would say at least initially, we'll get into the archives, we'll know a lot more in the coming years, but it looks like there are a number of initiatives that Vice President Cheney took alone, and we haven't seen that in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess the main point here is that a lot of our attention during the campaign is, and at this moment, it's very important that the vice presidential pick, you know, help with this voter group or that voter group. By the time things roll around in November, it's hard to find a whole lot of evidence that there's much of an impact. But what we don't focus on is the importance of the vice president as a decisive policymaker, and we need to put a little more attention on that part.
Right, because many of them also become president.
That's also true. There's a very long, pretty consistent history. We don't like to talk about it,
right,
but presidents becoming incapacitated or passing away while on the job, and the vice president stepping in.
All right, on to your report just released, third-party candidates. You write that they could impact Obama-McCain first by shaping the debate. Are they already, and how would they shape the debate?
Well, if you look at, you know, particularly I think on the Republican side, where John McCain struggled during the primaries and, you know, appears still to be struggling a bit to lock down and unify the base of the Republican Party, particularly among small government Republicans, so-called Reagan Republicans. He struggled with that. You've got Bob Barr, who's now the Libertarian candidate, and this is Barr's message. Barr's trying to pick up where Ron Paul left off during the primaries and to rally those voters. If he's able to attract them, it's going to be a big problem for John McCain.
Mm-hmm. And Ralph Nader, I wonder if this poll is right that I saw. You talk about Nader, and maybe because Obama's getting so much criticism for moving to the right on issues that some people who would have voted for Obama will vote for Nader. Have you seen this latest opinion research poll? Registered voters nationwide puts Obama at 46, McCain at 44, and 6% for Ralph Nader and 3% for Bob Barr.
I've seen it referred to. I think what we've seen in the past with Ralph Nader is that there is a significant part of the Democratic Party, which is quite liberal, and there's some discomfort. And if you kind of read the blogs and so forth in the left wing, you hear it,
right,
that Obama's selling out or moving too hard to the middle. You can't trust them and so forth. And I think part of that Nader vote reflects that. The last several, in 2004, we saw Nader doing better early in the year, and then his support collapsed as he moved towards Election Day and the choice frames up. One of the patterns that we've noticed in the last couple decades is that you tend to see third-party candidates' support fade as they get closer to Election Day, but with some exceptions. And one of those exceptions is that when you've got an incumbent party or candidate that's been in office for a while and the base of the party becomes pretty disaffected, you can see that support holding or even growing.
Mm-hmm.
So an example, Ross Perot in 1992, tilting against the Reagan and particularly H.W. Bush record on deficits and job loss, and blaming them for it. You get Ralph Nader running in 2000 against Clinton Gore for not being kind of true to Democratic or progressive liberal positions, and he's able to capitalize on that. The question this year is whether Bob Barr is going to be able to tap into a pretty strong sentiment among some part of the Republican Party base or the conservative base that President Bush, as one book said, has been a betrayer of the Reagan small government, smaller taxes argument.
Do you think that many people know who he is, though?
Well, I don't think Bob Barr is going to be a household name.
Right.
He doesn't seem to be, nearly as well known as Ralph Nader, for instance. But that's not necessary. I mean, one of the things that we found in our report is that you find pockets of third-party activism and success in different states. So we looked at, what's been going on in U.S. Senate gubernatorial races over the last decade, and we found 17 different races in these states where the third-party candidate played the role of a kingmaker, draining support from, one of the candidates and allowing the other to win. We saw this in Wisconsin in 2002 when Tommy Thompson's brother ran as a Libertarian, got 11%, and helped Jim Doyle to run. This happens all the time. It's pretty regular. Some folks may remember the 2006 John Tester win over the incumbent Senator Burns in Montana, and that was clearly made possible by a Libertarian draining away support from Senator Burns, the Republican.
Mm-hmm.
So the point here is that Barr isn't a household name, but in some states like Georgia and perhaps other states, he could well draw enough support to kind of pull the same sort of thing that Nader pulled in Florida, of draining just enough support from the Republican John McCain among the disaffected Libertarians to allow Obama to win.
So they've enjoyed, as your study would indicate, enough success, particularly in looking at Senate elections and in gubernatorial elections, to indicate that we do have an inclination, and more of an inclination, would you say, to vote for third-party candidates than in previous years?
I think so. I mean, I think it varies by state. In the upper Midwest, we've had a tradition of third parties doing well, and I think it's thought of as feasible. And we find 60 or more percent of the electorate saying that, yeah, they're actually inclined to support a third-party candidate. Now, in reality, that support dissipates pretty quickly when people become strategic and become concerned that they're wasting their vote and so forth. But nonetheless, these third-party candidates, I think, are pretty consistent in the last decade, and maybe two decades, in drawing support and tapping into this disaffection with the current two-party system and what they see as the breakdown.
Mm-hmm. And on the issues, Professor Jacobs, in what way will they be shaping the debate?
Well, as I was trying to say earlier, I think Bob Barr is pushing John McCain pretty hard to come back to the Ronald Reagan agenda of smaller government and lower taxes. Could well be a factor in why he's so strongly supported making the tax cuts permanent. A lot of his campaign rhetoric is about shrinking the size of government. I think that reflects this concern about he's got to lock down the space of the party. He's got no chance. And I think if we go along the campaign and Bob Barr is able to pick up support and, places like Georgia or perhaps other states, we'll see John McCain having to take even more extreme steps.
We're going to welcome phone calls for Professor Jacobs, and we'll do that momentarily. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050 for you to join our conversation. And we're looking at a report that they have just done that's come out of the Hubert Humphrey Institute of Public Affairs at the University of Minnesota, in which they looked at third-party candidates and found that they may determine the outcome of the 2008 presidential contest between the Democratic and Republican Party candidates. Careful review, they write, of recent presidential and statewide elections reveals two central findings that may provide the key to the 2008 presidential race, that they have enjoyed success in gubernatorial and Senate elections since the 90s, and also they will impact the Obama-McCain contest by shaping the debate. We welcome your phone calls. We'll go to them momentarily, or you can send an email if you'd like. We have that up and running. That's talk@WPR.org. In this 2008 election, would you consider going third party? What do you think of the history of going third party and how it may have made certain candidates more likely to win because of third party endorsements for other candidates? Witness the Ralph Nader run in Florida. So we certainly welcome your phone calls. We'll take them momentarily. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program this Wednesday, the cover story of this week's Time magazine, The Dangerous Mind of Mark Twain, How He Changed the Way We View Politics, Why He Was Ahead of His Time on Race, and What His Writings Can Teach America Today. We'll have three Mark Twain experts with us, and it should be a great hour. That's coming up, hour number two. For you to join this hour, 800-486-8655. Professor Lawrence Jacobs is our guest. He's a professor at the University of Minnesota, and he is also the director of the Center for the Study of Politics and Governance at the Hubert Humphrey Institute of Public Affairs. Third-party candidates in 2008 is what we're talking about, and we start our calls with Dom from Wisconsin Rapids. Hi.
Yeah, good morning, Kathleen. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Good morning, Professor. I'm really surprised. I wasn't going to call in, but I'm going to get in trouble with my wife for wasting all these minutes on the air. But we have some really smart people that we have ignored. Ross Perot, Joe Biden, Dennis Kucinich comes to mind. And I never thought I'd say this. Even Hillary Clinton is starting to look better, considering these two buffoons. This issue is not, how qualified you are, how honest you are, but how you can package your lies to a gullible soundbite, hungry public. So for the next 4 years, we will richly deserve what we get. If you look at McCain's record, he agreed with Bush on tax cuts and agreed with Bush on free trade. Obama, for crying out loud, agreeing with Bush again on Iran, on withdrawing from Iraq. you know, these guys are making up the legacy for Bush, and they're going to carve it out for him. He's probably going to improve on his popularity because of these two candidates. You know, that's the way I feel right now. I'm in a bind as to, you know, who to vote for.
And Hillary is looking better for what reason, Dom?
Hillary is looking better because at least she was consistent on health care. She was consistent on the job losses and as to what she was going to do. I don't know if she was lying or not, but at least she came across as saying, I'm going to do something for you guys. She was kind of clear about her statements when she won those two states, Michigan or states. She was pretty clear about it. And, you know, Obama has made so many flip-flops. He was starting to look good, and now I really don't know. And McCain doesn't know where he's going. And they're all agreeing on what the current administration is doing on a lot of issues, on Iran, on Iraq, on withdrawing troops from that, and, you know, on free trade. I just can't figure these guys out anymore.
Professor Jacobs.
Well, you know, I understand what Dom's saying, and I know that there are a lot of voters out there who are kind of scratching their heads at the choice facing them. But there is a kind of, fairly general election-to-election dynamic we see, and that dynamic is during the primaries, the candidates run pretty hard to the core of their party, which pushes the Republicans in a conservative direction, so John McCain on the tax cuts and backing away from the comprehensive immigration reform that he supported in the Senate, and then Barack Obama on the war and health care and some other things. But once the candidates win the nomination or appear to win the nomination, you then start seeing them move back towards the middle and to blur some of their positions. And the reason they do that is because they look at the broader electorate, which tends to be less liberal and less conservative and also less well-informed about some of these issues. So what we're seeing Obama do is very close to what I think Hillary Clinton would have done. And frankly, what we've seen most Democrats do after they've won the nomination. What John McCain has done, again, pretty similar to what we would see any Republican do. I think that the bigger challenge for John McCain is that he's running after George Bush, who has record low approval ratings. And so he's caught in a bit of a bind where he's trying to lock down the base, but as he does that, it leaves himself vulnerable to being seen as, you know, as Barack Obama puts it, as running for the third term.
And do you think it's necessary to run to the center, Professor Jacobs?
Well, you know, that's a great question. You know, we had Karl Rove who argued against that. Karl Rove argued that you run to your base, and particularly the Republican base, which votes at a very high level of turnout, and they're very loyal to the Republican candidate. We see, you know, vote support in presidential elections well over 90%. For Democrats, that's harder because they're a bit more like the cats who kind of hurt, you know, kind of scatter. And we see Democrats not being quite as loyal to their the Democratic standard bearer, you know, such as the Reagan Democrats and the Democrats who voted for Eisenhower and so forth. And also Democratic voters or those inclined towards Democratic voters don't turn out at the same rate. So, you know, there are it's a difficult waters to sled in.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much, Dom, for your call. Let's go next to Darren from Viroqua. Hi, Darren.
Hi, good morning. Well, I am definitely going to vote for a third-party candidate. I still have Ron Paul's sign in my yard, and I'll probably write him in. You know, Carol Quigley said it best, Bill Clinton's Georgetown mentor, that basically there isn't a difference between either party, and every 4 years the voters have a chance to vote one party in, the other party out, so that there will basically be no substantial policy differences, and it was meant to be that way. Carol Quigley defended the two-party system in saying that. I just find that, you know, both Barack Obama and John McCain have gone to the American-Israeli Friendship Pact. They've paid their dues to the Zionist movement, and we're going to continue to fight wars for Zionist-occupied Palestine, and we're going to continue to have these problems with oil. We've had, you know, the greatest cause of death in the United States is abortion. 50 million have died since 1972. We're not going to have any change under John McCain, and certainly not Barack Obama, who even voted against a bill in the Illinois State Senate that would have provided health care for a baby who survived abortion. So I'm definitely going to write Ron Paul in, and I'm one of those Pat Buchanan kind of angry white males who've been disaffected with the Republican Party. And John McCain made it very clear that he was interested in being Kerry's running mate, and now he's backing away from that, and he snapped at the reporter who exposed that. This guy is a rhino, a Republican in name only.
All right, Professor Jacobs.
Darren, I got a question for you. You vote for whether it's Ron Paul or maybe Bob Barr. Are you concerned that Barack Obama could be elected, and then he would be far less supportive of your views, let's say, on abortion?
I believe that it's a given that Barack Obama is going to win. Maybe I'm mistaken. You probably know more about this than I do. Maybe you can give me some hope. I have gotten to the point, in having been a member of the Constitution Party, it's time to put principles before politics. And, you know, this Karl Rove approach of, you know, you got to go to your base, or the Clinton-esque approach of you got to move to the center after the primaries, that's pandering. And I say it's time to, if you're pro-life, you're pro-life. If you're against the wars to make the world safe for Zionist-occupied Palestine, otherwise called the State of Israel, say that you're for endless wars for Israel. State your principles and stick to it.
Okay. Professor Jacobs, you want to follow up?
Well, I think, Darren is your classic third-party supporter. There are folks on the other side of the spectrum, on the left side, who feel that way about Barack Obama. They've supported Ralph Nader and other parties on that side. And I think the tension here is between the kind of strategic voting that both parties count on, which leads voters, you know, maybe not to pick their absolute favorite candidate, but to make this trade-off and saying, okay, I'm not going to get in John McCain the ideal candidate, but he's probably going to be more likely to put up for the Supreme Court someone like Judge Alito or Judge Roberts,
right,
who are clearly, you know, moving the court in a more conservative direction on a number of fronts, that I think, you know, generally Darren would support, versus, you know, the sense of kind of we have core principles and we can't compromise them. This is an ancient balancing act between the dynamics of a competitive election, how you win over core constituents versus those who aren't really driven by that. They're more driven by the kind of moral the vision part.
Where are all the Ron Paul supporters going?
Good question. Bob Barr hopes that they stay with the Libertarian Party. One of the things that I find fascinating about the Libertarian Party, and I'm a registered independent, I'm not in that party or any party, but they have been very well organized for a long time. And if you go back to the 1980 election, what you see is that they have been able to get their act together and are well organized enough and have done well enough that they are on the ballot in at least 36 states in presidential elections, and often quite a bit more. Now, what that means is the Libertarian Party has got its sailboat out there on the ocean, and if the conditions are right, and this could be one of those years, they could well pick up a good number of supporters, particularly in some states. I'm not seeing them do well overall nationally, but it's possible for them to pick up. And I think what Ron Paul was able to do in this primary is to tap into that libertarian streak. He excited a lot of people. And Bob Barr is doing everything he can to win those voters over.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Darren, very much for the call. We have lines open if you'd like to join our conversation. Lawrence Jacobs is our guest. He's at the Hubert Humphrey Institute of Public Affairs at the University of Minnesota, where he directs the Center for the Study of Politics and Governance, and he is Walter and Joan Mondale Chair for Political Studies. We're talking about the report that they have just completed that looks at the impact of third parties in the 90s, where they had substantial impact on gubernatorial and also, you could probably say, presidential races and Senate races, and what the chances are they'll have a big impact in terms of shaping the debate, in terms of taking votes from either the Republican or the Democrat. What do you think? We have lines open at 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050. And our email address is talk@wpr.org. Every now and then there's an issue that comes to the forefront, Professor Jacobs, that you feel has the possibility of changing the race. In today's news with Iran firing 9 missiles, I'm sure has many people worried on both sides, the Republican and the Democratic sides, about whether or not where this is heading.
Well, I think the Middle East is a one of the two or three wild cards in this race. And I think the general rule of thumb is that this race tilts in a Democratic direction because the agenda is dominated by issues in which voters generally think that Democrats do a better job on. And those are mostly economic and kind of personal economic situations like health care, education, jobs in the economy, and so forth. But if we get a shift in the focus of the country towards the Middle East, towards terrorist attack, towards Iran, that is going to push back towards a national security agenda on which the Republican Party tends to get voters, kind of gut-level trust. And on the issue, and on this area, John McCain has a significant and perhaps growing advantage. So there have been polls about who do you think would do a better job on as commander-in-chief and so forth. And John McCain has got a fairly sizable double-digit lead over Barack Obama. So this is a, kind of a conversation changer. If it, if Iran takes provocative action, or there's some kind of major flare-up of military action in the Middle East or elsewhere.
Let's go to Mitch from Green Bay next. Hi, Mitch.
Hello. I was curious. I work in the polls, and I talked to a lot of people that vote, and many of them are dissatisfied with who they vote for or what's there, but that's the only choices they get. And so I floated the idea that maybe beneath each candidate, they should have one more checkoff, and that would be none of the above. And if the candidates can't beat none of the above, they won't be allowed to run for that office for two presidential cycles. How do you think that would change the face of the elections in this country? It sure would give a lot more power to the people, right?
Well, it would certainly disrupt our current electoral system. Neither major political party is going to be supportive of that. And generally, we've seen the Supreme Court, when it's had an opportunity to weigh in on far more moderate proposals for reforming our voting system in a conservative direction. And the emphasis of the Supreme Court, and frankly both parties, is in locking in the current system. So I think your proposal, Mitch, is an interesting one, and there are others out there, but I think it has probably not much hope in terms of actually being brought into practice.
Thanks, Mitch, for the call. What is, Professor Jacobs, the ballot status in all of the states in the country for Barr and Nader and other third-party candidates to be on the ballot?
Well, ballot access is very difficult. It's one of the two or three ways in which third-party candidates are handicapped. And the general rule is you need to reach a certain level of support in past elections in order to get ballot access. And to get ballot access, if you don't have that, you've got to go through sometimes a complicated and expensive process, which varies state by state. So you need really to have quite a bit of organization and resources. to do this. When Ralph Nader ran in the last presidential election, one of his problems was he didn't have the Green Party endorsement, and he didn't have the resources to get himself in as many states as he had been able to when he was the Green Party candidate in 2000. And as I said, one of the impressive features of the Libertarian Party is that they get their candidate in presidential elections on the ballot all over the country, and they've been doing this for some time. Difficult and clearly a handicap for third-party candidates.
And let's go next to Mike from Appleton. Hello, Mike.
Yeah, good morning. A question for your guest here. In this electoral process, which seems endlessly long, there's a group of people who are interested in it. Let's say people like us who are talking about it now because, you know, we're informed, we have interest, we want to see which way it's going. But it would seem to me that the vast majority of people who vote probably take their decision very close to the election. And what I'd like to know is that, you know, is that a day before? Is it a week before? And being that the case, what do the candidates do, whoever they are, Democrat, Republican, third party, to shape the vote in their favor when they really have that very short time frame in which to work?
Great question, Mike. Here's the way I'd put it. About three-quarters or so of the electorate has probably already made up its mind. And it's made up its mind based on their affiliation with a political party. And maybe you're sitting there thinking, I've still got an open mind. If you're a Democrat or Republican, it's a good bet you're going to go with your party's standard bearer. And if you're not absolutely sure now, you will be by October because of the ways in which this campaign will get framed. And it's one of the jobs of our electoral process to organize these choices and to produce that sort of outcome. So the number of voters who are actually up for grabs is relatively small, very decisive. It'll shape the outcome. Maybe it's 10%, maybe it's a quarter. Sometimes it's hard to say. We do know something about those undecided voters. You're right. Many of them decide in the last 2 or 3 days or the last few weeks. They tend to be less well-informed overall. And they tend to be less interested in politics. So one of the things you see the candidates doing and drives folks like us a little batty is the candidates become less and less specific, less and less focused on policy issues. They practice the art of ambiguity. And that is a very strategic, in some cases, rational strategy given who the voters are who are up for grabs, who are not interested necessarily in policy issues or in, kind of the detailed tooth pulling that we like to get into, talking about, you know, whether it's Iran or the Middle East or abortion or other kinds of questions in front of us.
May I have a follow-up?
Of course.
Yeah. It would seem to me that in this election, as probably never before, what I think is going to actually decide which way this election is going to go are not U.S. citizens, but it's world events, something that may happen, you know, very close to the election in one way or the other, you know, Iran doing something stupid or something of that nature. I think that this is one of those rare opportunities in which we're not going to decide who our next president is going to be, but, you know, somebody else somewhere else.
Well, I think, you could be right. It's not that uncommon. If you go back to the 1980 race, you had hostages in Iran, and the Carter-Mondale administration was working very hard to get them released. There have been several books written suggesting that the Reagan campaign staff might have been involved in talking to Iran and negotiating, when they would be released. So this concern about international affairs and how it might impact on American presidential elections been around for a long time, hard to predict, and I think both candidates have to be very careful in how that issue's played out. A couple weeks ago, one of John McCain's top advisors stated the obvious, which we're talking about, that if there was a major terrorist attack or national security emergency would help John McCain in the presidential election, John McCain had to come out and distance himself from this close advisor. Because the it was seen as kind of impolitic, hoping for, you know, disaster. So I think it's difficult, but you're absolutely right that, and perhaps particularly in this election, when you've got Barack Obama, who, you know, has got this real deficit on national security issues running, it could be kind of a game changer.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call. And what if there is an Israeli strike on Iran?
Well, you know, I'm not sure that. I mean, that would be you know, quite an event. It would be very provocative. I think one of the big kind of domestic political elements of that would be how Iran responded to it. You know, so for instance, Iran has made it, I think, pretty clear that if they're attacked, shipment of oil in the Middle East and that very critical waterway around them would be disrupted. Now, you can imagine oil is gas is already about almost $4.50, heading towards $5 a gallon. That situation could become much worse. Now, does that help John McCain, or does it play into Barack Obama's strength on the kind of domestic economic issues? It's hard to game plan these sort of things, and all I can say is I would agree generally with the questioner that you know, an attack by Israel on Iran and then Iran's subsequent actions would be something that would certainly change the nature of the campaign and some of the issues being talked about.
Let's go next. Thanks very much, Mike, for your call. Let's go next to Dave from Ellison Bay. And Dave, hi.
Good morning. Yeah, I'd like to first identify myself as someone who has voted third party in the last couple of presidential elections, partly out of conscience and partly as a protest. I would love to see third party candidates be more a part of the political scene, if you will, nationally, locally. But I'd like to ask this. Say first that don't we live in sort of a myth about how presidents are elected? And I mean, the presidential politics especially is run primarily by the Democrats and Republicans. And the myth that's promoted in all this is that the president is elected by popular vote. And isn't the president really elected by the Electoral College? And how does a third-party candidate, or how have third-party candidates factored in the Electoral College?
Point, Mike. Sorry, Dave. There's no doubt that the Electoral College is an important influence in presidential elections. We do not have popular vote. That is, the candidate who wins the most votes in the country is not automatically president. We saw that with Al Gore in 2000. Instead, you need to win 270 Electoral College votes. And as we saw in 2000, and we've seen several other times in American history, this is possible. And it came down to essentially what happened in Florida, which Al Gore lost by a few hundred votes, though there was some debate about what happened with the uncounted votes. Now, the history of Electoral College is very interesting. It was deliberately designed by the framers of the Constitution to be a check on popular elections. There was a debate on whether to have a popular election, and the fear was that this would leave the country susceptible to demagogues, perhaps the foreign influence. It was generally not a good idea. The Electoral College was set up literally as a group of what I think were expected to be the wealthier, better educated, who would cast their own independent judgment, not necessarily following the popular will. Now, generally, that's not the way things have been playing out. We occasionally have what are known as disloyal electors who don't follow the popular vote in their state, but generally the states do follow the popular vote. So the bottom line here is you're right that the system has been set up to undermine popular voting.
And thanks so much for your call. We have some lines open if you'd like to join the conversation. The number is 800-486-8655-227-2050 if you're joining us in Milwaukee. Our guest, Professor Lawrence Jacobs, is Professor Walter F. and Joan Mondale Chair for Political Studies at the University of Minnesota and Director for the Study of Politics and Governance at the Hubert Humphrey Institute of Public Affairs. They've just done a major examination of the impact of third-party candidates on previous elections and how they may help determine the outcome of the race in 2008. So we're welcoming your phone calls, and we'll take more in a moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program, we'll have three Mark Twain scholars. Mark Twain is on the cover of Time magazine this week in a very interesting article titled The Dangerous Mind of Mark Twain, How He Changed the Way We View Politics, Why He Was Ahead of His Time on Race, and What His Writing Can Teach America Today. So that's coming up the second hour of our show. 800-486-8655 is the number for you to join this hour. Professor Jacobs, what about the debates that there isn't anything definitely formulated, but are any of these third-party candidates, what would it take for them to sit alongside Obama and McCain? Will they be included?
Well, this has often been part of the debate about the debates that we've had in recent years. The general rule of thumb is that the third-party candidates have to reach or exceed 5% in recent polls to be invited into the debates. Now, you know, why 5% and not some other level? There are debates about that. Ralph Nader was upset that he wasn't included in 2004, and he would show up in protest. You may remember Ross Perot was invited during the 1990s presidential elections, and, you know, it's quite colorful and effective. So, you know, this is a very important issue because third-party candidates often don't have much financial or organizational resources, the debates are a critical tool for them to get their message out. And as you look around the country at these U.S. Senate and gubernatorial races where third-party candidates have done well and even won, the debates are often the launching pad for their success.
Let's go next to George from Milwaukee. Hi, George.
Hi, yeah. I favored Nader in 2000, did a Nader trader vote with a friend of mine in Maryland so Gore could help win Wisconsin. But I do think that anybody who's tempted to vote for Nader this time because of Obama moving to the center should just remember the Iraq War and the very conservative Supreme Court that would result. We've got a pretty conservative one right now, but it'll get even worse if McCain gets reelected. It gets elected.
Professor Jacobs.
Well, I think, you know, that's what George has said is a really excellent illustration of the kind of strategic voting that I think many Democrats will engage in this year, and why, you know, if Nader's getting 6% today in national polls, his number, as we saw in 2004, will decline rapidly as we get closer to Election Day. But, again, this dynamic that's interesting is the voters who usually go Republican but may be fatigued or disappointed with what's happened during the Bush-Cheney administration may be willing to kind of post a conscience vote or a protest vote as Democrats did in 2000. So the strategic voting that George is talking about is something I think we will see, but we may see it more on the Republican side than the Democratic side.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting to me, Professor Jacobs, that we're even talking about this. It seems to me not that long ago that we had this phenomenal enthusiasm, particularly for Obama, and that we had a consensus on the Republican side that McCain was a honest man and a war hero in many ways, and that people were pretty happy with their choices this year. Record turnouts, a lot of excitement. What the heck happened?
Well, I think there's still a lot of that. I mean, again, just looking at the polls, you know, their approval ratings are still pretty high, and their negative ratings are not as high as we've seen in recent elections with other candidates. So I think there is that sentiment. What we're seeing, though, is that for strategic reasons, as the candidates look to the fall election and they start positioning themselves for that battle, which is very different from this much more narrow kind of hand-to-hand combat for the nomination, they've had to make some changes in their positions to get ready. And as they've done that, some of their earlier supporters or those who are wondering about them have gotten angry, and they're pretty vocal. And I think in today's web-linked, internet-based system, folks who are angry have a real voice. And that may be part of what we're picking up on here. It's not necessarily a large group, but they're very articulate, and they've now got a platform for letting us all know about how disappointed they are.
Right. Thanks, George, for the call. Email coming in from Chuck from Green Bay. Is President Bush purposely stirring up Iran to affect the outcome of the election?
I tend to doubt that. President Bush has got a very long, consistent track record with regard to Iran. He's made it very clear almost from the very first months in office that he disapproved of Iran. He's very concerned, as are many other countries, about the nuclear weapons that Iran may be developing. There's some dispute about that, but so I think the president's position has been very strong on that. And, frankly, from a national security point of view, you wouldn't want the country to be kind of rudderless for 9 months or so while we move through the election process. So it's not to be naive. I mean, obviously, there's a political element to this, but I would be I think the president has been pretty consistent on Iran.
We go to Bruce from Milwaukee. Hi, Bruce.
Hi there. This is a great topic. I have a story about a disaffected voter. My father is 88. He's always voted Republican. For the first time, he changed parties and registered as a Democrat to vote for Clinton. He is very disaffected now by both parties. He can't go back to McCain because he doesn't want the continuation of the war and the regulation of the financial markets, which has caused the upheavals. So he doesn't see Obama as having the strength or the capacity to wrestle with the Democratic Senate and House. And I'm wondering if, in fact, you think that the leadership in the Democratic Party didn't want Clinton because she was too much to contend with and would have forced agendas that would be contrary to a pro-Israel lobby, as an example, in the Democratic Party.
Professor?
I'm not sure I'm quite following the question. I think there were certainly Republican Party operatives who thought Clinton was a candidate who presented particular challenges because she's experienced and has been around the block a few times, either herself or as part of the Bill Clinton's administration and elections. But they also saw her as someone who was someone that presented some real opportunities because her unfavorable ratings and her track record were kinds of things they could exploit. So I don't think there was a kind of single mind on the Republican side about Hillary Clinton. Barack Obama is a phenomenal talent as a campaigner, as an organizer, and I think we can already see with the kind of shifting in Republican circles in terms of strategy and how to take him on that they haven't quite figured out what's going to be an approach that's going to work with this guy. And I know there are lots of people who sit around kind of game planning elections, but usually the smart ones think more in terms of trade-offs, in terms of relative benefits and costs. And I think Hillary Clinton was a bit of a mixed bag, some real possibilities, but also some real elements to her campaign that would have been intimidating. Barack Obama, this is not something you necessarily wish for, a candidate who can be quite telegenic and charismatic, who can excite voters and appeal not only to Democrats but to independents. That's a candidate to wrestle with.
Mm. One more phone call. We're almost out of time. Roy from Hurley is next. Hi, Roy.
Good morning.
Hi.
I would like to propose a little scenario in this deal.
All right.
Obama's record with the veterans is not too shiny, And if he gets only half of the 23 million veteran votes, and half of Hillary's 18 million votes, I kind of have my doubts if he's going to make it. So right. I wish him luck, but that's what I think.
All right. Thanks for your thoughts. We have about 15 seconds. Professor Jacobs.
Barack Obama gets over 90% of Hillary Clinton's voters at the end of the day, I think. In terms of the vets, Barack Obama would be delighted to get half because Democrats, at least in recent elections, haven't done that well.
All right, sir. We'll check in again.
Okay, good.
The process keeps going into you as well, as always. Professor Lawrence Jacobs, our guest, director of the Center for the Study of Politics and Governance at the Hubert H. Humphrey Institute of Public Affairs, professor of political science at the University of Minnesota, and co-author of a report that is looking at the third-party candidate may impact Obama-McCain by shaping the debate and by playing kingmaker, by capitalizing on third-party successes in as many as 28 state races in the year 2006. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, and thanks to John Anderson for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. And thank you for calling. As always, news is ahead from National Public Radio, and we'll be back with more Wednesday conversation here on the Ideas Network.